Hello.
You're on with Nick and Fiona.
Shocking.
Yeah, it's upsetting.
Welcome to The Playlist, where we talk about movies and TV shows that are worth your time. I'm Fiona Williams, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nick Bassine. Hey, Nick.
Hi, Fiona. I'm super excited about today's show. We're talking about Michael Moore's new movie, Fahrenheit 11.9. We are talking about a new comedy on SBS Viceland and SBS On Demand, You're the Worst. And we're talking about what we've been watching, but first, Michael Moore's new documentary, Fahrenheit 11.9.
I'm sick and tired of people telling me that America's the greatest country because we can whip your ass.
I hate some of these people, but I'd never kill them.
When the operation of the machine becomes so odious, you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, and you've got to make it stop.
If nobody's gonna do it, then I gotta do it.
And I don't give a who you are. I'll fight you in the damn street right now.
Okay,
how the f did this happen?
The American dream is dead. Stop resisting.
And if you're thinking, hang on a minute, he's already made that movie, you're probably thinking of Fahrenheit 9/11.
From 2004.
Correct. And this time he's done something a little clever with the titling, and it's Fahrenheit 11.9, which in American ways of doing the dates is the 9th of November, day after the US presidential election in which Donald Trump became US president.
Right. And so this is his investigation of that surprising, shocking, terrifying win.
Turn of events.
And the fallout over the last couple of years. I mean, that's broadly what it is. Mm. He goes into a lot of different areas. A lot of his passion points, the clean water situation in Flint.
His hometown of Flint.
Right. Grassroots, democracy, how different movements start and how they get squashed and where we go from here. I have to say that I was very affected by it. I wasn't sure how I was going to feel about it because I don't know how useful going over the election, as freshly traumatic as it always is to watch, I don't know how useful that is. I kind of want to move forward and figure out how we improve things. And I didn't know how useful this was going to be in that end. But he is excellent at bringing stuff together and making a case and presenting it in an emotional way. And
Because I think it is about how do we get out of it, we being Americans, because he does use us very much. So he knows his audience. He knows who's going to see his film. So it's very much we, how do we do this? Because you could think, ugh, it's Michael Moore doing Trump. I know what that movie's going to be. Pass.
Yes.
But it's very much about the circumstances, the apathy, really, the political apathy of the millions of people who don't vote.
Yeah.
Because they just think the system's rigged and it's like it's just going to happen anyway. But he looks at that mindset and it's the circumstances that allow someone like Donald Trump to be elected.
And circumstances that help create that mindset. I mean, voters obviously have accountability for their actions, but when you create a system where it makes you feel like my vote doesn't matter, then you're not going to try that hard to vote.
Exactly. And then it looks at, importantly, you know, Michael Moore is lowercase liberal, but he takes pot shots at himself. He shows photos of him cozying up with Jared Kushner. Yeah.
Softballing interviews with Donald Trump.
Yes, definitely. So like he puts himself, you know, on the hot seat, whatever, that's a clumsy way of putting it. And also criticizes Barack Obama because
was very striking.
Yeah. So it's like, let's not pretend that everything was amazing and then on November 9, everything went to hell.
Yeah.
I think it's important in the way that he does present that case. So in this film, he's cherry-picking a lot of the films that have gone before. You know, like he's looked at healthcare in America in Sicko and he's looked at corruption within the system in Capitalism, A Love Story. And importantly, in his first film, Roger and Me, it was about Flint, Michigan, his hometown, which, as you said, is in the center of this one because of the water crisis there. And, you know, that really connects back to it's a personal story for him. And it looks at the way that the system has failed people in shocking ways.
Yeah, like it's upsetting.
Shocking. Like I audibly gasped. There are just outrageous ways that public health is just completely disregarded.
I think some people might kind of peripherally know a little bit about this. This goes right in there and shows you the serious, ugly truth.
It really does. The town had no clean drinking water.
And how it goes all the way to the top when Obama comes to town. Oh man, that was hard to watch.
It is hard to watch. And importantly, you know, Michael Moore, his style can be quite polarizing.
Sure.
But I think in that sequence, importantly, he lets other people do the talking. Like, people tell their own stories. You see whistleblowers, they tell their own story. And he takes a bit of a back seat. Of course, he's driving it and he weighs in where he needs to. But I think that central thesis of he's on a very fundamental level how much the system is failing people. And I think that's really important in the way that it then goes off to, you can lampoon Trump, but there's so much more going on. And
right.
From that, having established that, then it sort of makes the case of where can we go from here, and showing some of the leading lights that permit the future of the Democratic Party. You know, some of the hopefuls who are hoping to have a position. And importantly, this is coming out a week before the
midterm elections.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. It was so interesting. I mean, there's so many good parts, so many good montages. Whoever he's got in charge of pulling clips and putting things together did an amazing job.
Very skilled.
I loved those people, the grassroots people, that these new important voices who aren't tied to corporate money, and so many of them are women of color, and how exciting that is. He's not trying to be cynical about it, but they're fighting against a system and a Democratic Party system that doesn't want those people, or at least won't champion them, because they're worried about the entire country thinking that the Democratic Party is going too far to the left. Mm-hmm. All of that hysteria was really interesting. I like the way it starts off like a horror movie while they're putting together the Donald Trump wax figurine.
Yes.
I mean, yes. It's a little bit, oh boy, here we go. But at the same time, it roped me right in. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, of course, it does show the events of election night and how miserable Team Trump seemed to be when the result was known.
All the criticisms of Hillary Clinton and how preposterous all that email stuff looks now. And the montage showing how the people that criticize her over emails or whatever else, all of them are sexual predators and have been fired or...
Correct.
Except for Trump.
Well, all of the journalists who were particularly outspoken about
it's that kind
the Hillary
of thing.
Problem, you know, quote unquote. Yeah, it's
puts things
it's
in
Matt
perspective.
Lauer,
yeah.
It's Charlie Rose. Yeah, it's all people, men who've since fallen from grace, rightly so.
Just as an example, I knew going in, Hillary Clinton got a raw deal out of the whole thing. She was treated unfairly. I also knew that there were a lot of men that got in trouble for sexual misconduct. But when he put it together, that was surprising and very affecting. Mm. And I think he did. There was a lot of those kinds of moments. I mean, there was a time when I thought it was starting to lose its way a little bit because we started to go in lots of different directions. But then he brings it back.
Yeah, I think he brings
together
it
at the end.
I think it's his best in a long time, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, the last great one was, I mean, where is it? Bowling for Columbine?
I enjoyed Capitalism, a Love Story.
That was okay. Yeah, Slacker, Uprising, did you see that?
No.
Sicko, did you see that?
Yeah.
It was all right.
It was good. It was
okay, right? Fahrenheit 9/11, did you see that?
Yes. Great. And Bowling for Columbine, like, they're the biggies that you...
Oh, Where to Invade Next.
Mm.
That was a couple of years ago.
Yeah. But I do think this one, like we say, it does touch on the films that have gone before, and this is his lane.
How did you feel at the end of it? Hopeful, depressed, a little bit of both?
A little from column A, a little from column B, because he doesn't fix it. He doesn't say, here's what we need to do. It's kind of, you know, the onus is on Americans, really, to show up. Because the whole thing is about apathy and disillusionment, and that's what enables situations like this to happen. So it's, you know, balls in your court. So,
if there are any Americans listening, please vote.
You have.
I have. I voted early, sent my ballot in a few weeks ago. Mm. Yeah, that was a huge bummer after that 2016 election when you see the voting numbers and who doesn't vote. And even after Michael Moore makes his case about how the system fails those people or whatever and encourages the apathy, I think, get out there. But then there's also all the voter suppression.
Oh.
It's a wonderful roller coaster.
Yeah. So anyway, Fahrenheit 11.9 is in cinemas now.
So next we're talking about a new show on SBS Viceland and SBS On Demand. It's been around for a few years now, but there's a new series starting, You're the Worst.
It's been hard to watch before.
Yes. It was on a channel and then it was on a different channel. And then I don't think all of the seasons aired here on various channels. So now we're airing all of them, the first four seasons, plus the new season, season five.
You're the worst. And it's great.
It's very good. I think it's definitely a standout show of the last 5 years. It's very funny. It's about Jimmy and Gretchen. He's an unfulfilled jerk of a writer. She's a misanthropic publicist. And they...
Jerk of a publicist.
Yeah, she's a, they're both definitely jerks.
But lovable.
They run into each other at a wedding. They get together and they develop surprising feelings for each other and a relationship of a kind develops.
A reluctant relationship.
Yes.
Yes.
So it's primarily about that relationship, how it blossoms, how two hateful people come together, hating each other, hating themselves, hating the world, but they each have a kind of friend. And they become a foursome, effectively. Living with Jimmy at his house is Edgar, who is an Iraq war veteran suffering from PTSD. And my favorite character is maybe Gretchen's friend, Lindsay, who is absolutely shamelessly hateful and just seems like a really, really terrible person. But she is so funny. Mm. And
very enjoyable.
Yes, there's lots of great laughs. Even as the relationship blossoms, it's very believable, very natural, and how people with problems come together.
Mm. So it's a romantic comedy, but not in a warm and fuzzy and everyone learns a life lesson kind of way at all. It's very cynical and acerbic, and it's my kind of comedy.
Yeah. I really like Jimmy's, he's obviously not likable, like all of these people, but his overreactions to things, he's just constantly shocked and appalled by everything and everyone. It's very funny. And when she is expressing her disgust, it's a lot of laughs.
Yes, and very bingeable, and happily, all of it is available at SBS On Demand.
I'll tell you something. I'll tell you a little, little personal anecdote. So I watched the first three seasons, but a few years ago now. And so I was rewatching it. I watched the first two episodes. And then I found myself on the train. I was listening to a podcast. And I thought, I want to get back into this world. Fired up You're the Worst on the phone. It's not my favorite way to watch something. But I wanted to be in the world. It's very bingeable.
Excellent.
Is the point. So yeah, that is starting on SBS Viceland and SBS On Demand on Monday, the 5th of November. Now we come to the part of the show where we talk about what we've been watching. Fiona, what have you been watching?
I have been watching Alfonso Cuarón's Roma. And you? So the multi-Oscar nominee and winner, Alfonso Cuarón, you may know him from Gravity. You may also know him from Y Tu Mamá También. Am I saying that right?
Yep.
Great. One of the Harry Potters.
Oh.
Yep. Don't ask me which one.
Yeah, don't like any of those ones.
Well, he's going to be up for another Oscar in some
Children
capacity.
Of Men.
Oh, yes, Children of Men.
That
fair point, yes. So it's a year in the life of a middle-class family in Mexico in 1970, and it's inspired by the women who raised him, so his mum and his nanny and housekeeper. I think it's beautiful. I found it quite very affecting, actually, and it's almost documentary-like, so it's quite neorealist, but in a dreamy way as well, because it's black and white, and it's all, you know, it's a memory piece, really, because he's recalling moments in his life, but largely in the life of his nanny. And there's quite a significant plot point that's desperately sad, but it's beautiful.
So I love those, some of those movies, right? I love Y Tu Mamá También and Children of Men. Gravity, I liked Gravity. I thought it was pretty good. Where do you put it with those movies, would you say?
Well, I think he's very good at doing wildly different movies. You know what I mean? So it looks completely different. Like I say, it's black and white. Like, it's not heavily plot driven. So it's not for everyone. I'll just put that out there. Some people might be quite bored with it because they're expecting a plot. There is a subtle one, but you're walking in this family's shoes for a year as the dynamics in the family change, as Mexico changes within this year. And there's a very strong race and class tensions, and it uses language really well. So there's different languages spoken, like the domestic staff don't always speak Spanish or the...
What else do they speak? English?
Well, they've got their own
An indigenous
dialects.
Language.
Exactly, yes.
Oh, great.
So, and that's indicated in the subtitles.
Oh, that's cool.
So it's interesting. And one of the kids says, well, what are you saying? Speak, you know.
Yeah, right.
Can't understand you. Yes. Subtle. And, yeah, there's just little moments like that. So you get just a really elegant glimpse at their world. And, you know, it's a transformative year for this family. And it's beautiful. I think it's, I loved
fantastic.
It.
Fantastic. I definitely want to see it.
And the thing is, I saw it because it's coming up in the Cine Latino Film Festival this month, which is touring Melbourne, Canberra, Sydney, Brisbane and Perth.
Do you know offhand what else is in that?
Yeah. Well, this is opening night. Roma is the opening night. And they're also closing with Y Tu Mama Tambien.
Oh, nice.
I haven't seen that, so it's a nice Caron top and tail of the festival. There is also The Heiresses, which won the top award at the Sydney Film Festival. And that's great too.
Not The Heiress with Olivia de Havilland.
No. Would that classify as Latino?
I don't know. You can never tell with the old time movie stars. They all change their names.
That's true. This one is set in Paraguay and it's directed by Marcello Martinesi. And again, that's a really elegant slice of life kind of movie about a couple, two women, and one of them goes to prison for fraud. Or she can't pay the fine, so she has to go to prison for a spell. And it's how her partner manages without her. She can't drive, but she learns to drive. They've got this beautiful old Mercedes. And she sort of becomes an Uber driver to women who don't feel safe getting taxis and don't feel safe going around. So she's kind of there. That's a beautiful film as well. So I'd encourage you to see that too. So good stuff.
Fantastic.
And Roma, I was saying, it's at this festival, but Netflix have it. So it will end up on Netflix.
Oh, great.
So if you want to see it on the big screen, I would encourage seeing it on the big screen. Go to the Cine Latino Film Festival.
Fantastic. Oh, there. I get my tickets already.
So the Cine Latino Film Festival kicks off in Melbourne on the 13th of November and runs for the latter half of November all around Australia.
Fantastic.
What have you been watching?
I went through the pleasure and pain of Bohemian Rhapsody, which is a music biopic about Freddie Mercury and his band, or the band. It wasn't his band. They make a very clear point that it was everybody's band, Queen. So I can't remember the last time I was whipped around so much by a movie. Mm. So I didn't go in with high expectations. I really liked the trailer because I thought Rami Malek looked really good.
It's a great trailer.
And it's very high energy, very exciting.
Cut to the music because it's...
And then, the music is great. But Bryan Singer, who is going through some problems...
Well, he's caused a few too, allegedly.
Yes. Because
he left midway through the project.
He was fired.
Yes.
And so that's all it usually spells trouble for a movie. Also, it's an authorized biography, authorized by the band. And that usually means it was not going to be that dramatic. And it wasn't. I have never seen a band get together and become famous so easily and quickly in my life. Rami Malek just kind of sees the other guys playing at a club in London. Hey, you guys need a singer? Yeah, we just lost our singer. Oh, great. He starts singing. Suddenly they're whipping out hits and breaking records. And the dialogue, is so cheesy. It's so on the nose, so forced. And then they get to how they came up with the hit songs. So I'm just messing around on the bass guitar with this riff. What do you guys think? Ba-da-dum, bum, bum. And
it's a good riff.
Chills going through my body. I was in tears because those songs are so good. And Rami Malek does an amazing job, I think, when he's performing as Freddie Mercury. Right. I mean, he looks a lot like him.
It's pretty uncanny, isn't it?
I think they overdid the overbite a little bit. Okay. I think it's in real life, it was a little more subtle. But he looks just like him. He performs just like him. I watched some old footage of the real Freddie Mercury. I think that was great. And I mean, these songs are so good. And to see it up on the big screen and watch Rami Malek pound them out, those moments were thrilling.
Uh-huh.
And I was in tears for every time they did it.
Yeah.
We Will Rock You. That is such a great song.
Yeah.
And it's so iconic. And it's in every sporting arena in America. Plays that song constantly. And it was very moving to watch that stuff unfold. And then after the music, we'd go back to the very...
The stodgy story.
Yeah, the very by-the-numbers story.
I hear the Live Aid sequence is pretty special.
Watching him do that show is just amazing.
Yeah.
And it's kind of an interesting choice to end it with that 20 minutes. I didn't know that their performance at Live Aid was the big deal that it was.
Yeah.
So I was just, yeah, just being yanked back and forth. Mm-hmm. Also, I didn't know that Freddie Mercury's real name is Farrokh Bulsara and he's Indian.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea. That was an unbelievable revelation. His parents, he was born in Zanzibar. He grew up mainly in Mumbai. Mm-hmm. He went to the same high school as my father.
How's your dad's falsetto?
It's not great. I wish the movie had done a whole lot of things, yeah. One of which was get into his relationship with his parents in India. They do a little bit of it, but not that much. Mm-hmm. I mean, he changed his name legally. He's clearly trying to move on and separate himself from some of that stuff. And so I would have liked more of an investigation into that. But just knowing that he was Indian, I thought, this is amazing.
Mm. Yeah, it's disappointing that the storyline elements kind of played it safe. Like
super safe.
His story is an opportunity for a biopic to really go somewhere, because we all know the songs, and like you do forget the songs themselves and how good they are, because you kind of hear them everywhere and they're in ads and
absolutely
turn on one of the greatest hits radio stations
overplayed.
And it's I want to non-stop break. Block and it's always gonna
absolutely. And to see them see it at the beginning, even though it's kind of cheesy, just to see it happening is very exciting, and to find out why these songs were so great.
Sure.
As a whole movie, I don't think it's great. If you love that music, I think you can have a good time. I love the music, and so it was fun, and his performance is great. It's worth seeing. I'm going to say it's worth seeing, but it's not
it's a series, a collection of moments that are really connected with you.
That's what
embedded
it is,
in a all right, biopic.
But it's not like I'm Not There, you know, or something super creative.
Yeah,
the Bob Dylan one, or Amadeus might be my favorite.
Yeah,
one.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Or even Straight Outta Compton. That was also authorized, I think, but somehow they made that work better somehow. But yeah, it was. There were some great moments, absolutely. It was tremendous. So that's in cinemas now. Well, that's it for our show. Make sure you subscribe to SBS The Playlist wherever you get your podcasts. If you want to engage with the podcast, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at SBS Movies. I'm on Twitter at Nick Bassine.
I'm on Twitter at Anything But Fifi.
The Playlist is produced by Dan Barrett with editing and mixing by Jeremy Wilmot. See you next week.
Thanks for listening. Hey!